Just after 6 p.m. on Saturday the 19th of May 2018, Susan Forsyth is driving near the village of Enniskerry in North County Wicklow. Her 12-year-old son is in the car with her. Close to the entrance of the Powerscourt estate, she sees a dark-coloured SUV-type car stopped along the side of the road. The rear door is open, and she sees a man forcing a young woman into the back of the car. The woman looks at Susan frantically. She's shouting. Her shouts turn to screams as the man yells at her. The man gets into the car and drives off, with the frightened-looking young woman in the back. Susan knows something is very wrong. She pulls her car over a short distance away and dials 999, reporting what she has seen to Gardaí. Around 10 minutes later, Garrett Thompson has just left Bray to drive home when a black Jeep-type vehicle pulls out in front of him. He sees what he thinks is a young girl, waving and banging on the rear window. She has both of her hands up. She looks worried. Garrett phones Gardaí to tell them what he's seen. Later that night, at 11:40 p.m., Danilo and Teresita Valdez, a Filipino couple who live and work on the grounds of Charleville House on the outskirts of Enniskerry, call Gardaí to report their daughter Justine missing. She hasn't come home. She's never late. She hasn't answered her phone. She's never out of touch. They've been fighting off dread for hours and have seen the Garda helicopter circling the area. As Justine's parents give Gardaí all the information they can about their daughter, a frantic manhunt is already underway as Gardaí attempt to find Justine and the man in the dark SUV. When a person is killed in Ireland, the Gardaí turn to the forensic examiners of the Technical Bureau. For 25 years, I was one of them. I'm John Sweetman. At crime scenes, I learned to listen to what the evidence was saying and what the killer was trying to silence. A smudged print, a misplaced everyday object, the smallest detail that revealed the truth. Now, in this Go Loud original podcast, I return to some of Ireland's most compelling cases. This is Lines of Inquiry, a podcast that follows the evidence and reveals the story behind each case. In this episode, the shocking abduction and murder of Justine Valdez, a young Filipino student snatched in broad daylight on a May evening in Enniskerry in 2018, and the race against time to find her, and the man who has taken her. This is Lines of Inquiry, the search for Justine. Justine Gerald Valdez was born on the 20th of June 1993 in Ariteo on the northern island of Luzon in the Nueva Vizcaya province of the Philippines. It's a relatively small town, around 260 kilometers from the capital, Manila. It is a town with few economic prospects. Luzon is the most populous of the thousands of islands that make up the Philippines archipelago, and with a population of almost 65 million people, it is the fourth most populous island in the world. Justine was the only child of Danilo and Teresita, or Danny and Tess as they were known. Danny and Tess emigrated to Ireland to find work when Justine was just 7 years old. They left her in the care of her grandparents and would send back money from Ireland to provide for their young daughter. The decision to leave their child was tough, incredibly tough, but they felt they had no choice if they wanted to give Justine a better life. Danny and Tess moved halfway around the world, to a strange land with a different language, for their daughter's future. Tess would call Justine every day while they were apart. In 2015, Justine at last got to join her parents, moving to Ireland, a place that by then Danny and Tess considered their second home. When she arrived, she would find her new home in the grand setting of Charleville House, just outside Enniskerry in County Wicklow. The Valdez family lived in a cottage on the grounds of the old mansion. Danny was the groundskeeper at the stately home, and Tess worked there too, as a housekeeper in the main building. There was great love and affection in their small family, and Justine would promise her parents she would get her education in Ireland, then find a well-paying job and earn enough to buy them their own home in Ireland, and then allow them to retire while enjoying the finer things in life. Danny and Tess described their daughter as beautiful inside and out. She never caused them trouble and always helped them out when asked. For Justine, she saw her parents as simply the greatest parents in the world, the two people who had helped her through all of life's toughest moments. Locals around the town knew Justine as a friendly young woman, standing just over 5 feet tall and always smiling and laughing, and always bringing smiles to others. She was an innocent but hard-working young woman, with a lot of warmth to share with the world. By 2018, at 24 years old, Justine was a first-year student at Talla Institute of Technology, studying accounting and finance. She also had a part-time job working at a bakery in Bray. To reach her college, she would make the 15-minute walk to her usual bus stop on a quiet, narrow country road, before taking the bus to make the 30-kilometre trip to Dublin. At 7:35 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, May 19, 2018, Tess and Danny Valdez were leaving their home to go to work. Justine was still asleep. Her parents decided not to wake her before they left. Later that day, shortly before midday, Justine walked through the gates of Charleville Lodge and turned towards Enniskerry Village. She walked to her regular bus stop and took the bus to Bray, where she had an appointment at 2 p.m. that day at the Garda station to renew her residency permit. She was in contact with Tess throughout the day, and the two exchanged 63 messages on their phones over Facebook Messenger, like they always did. Just casual conversation and joking around. At 4:20 p.m, Tess texted Justine to ask her to buy some bread before coming home. Justine replied and told her that she was at Ben Dunn's gym in Cherrywood and would get some on her way back. After leaving the gym, she did just that, popping into a Super Value to get the bread before going home. At 5:40 p.m, Justine boarded the 185 bus for the short journey home, and about 20 minutes later, she stood up and prepared to get off the bus. But unseen by Justine, a dark-coloured SUV-type vehicle followed the bus closely. Justine stepped off the number 185 bus in the shadow of the Enniskerry clock tower at around 6 p.m. As she did, the dark-coloured car passed the bus and drove on. As the bus departed, she set off on that familiar road, with her blue bag slung over her shoulder. Inside was her iPad mini that she used for those Facebook messages to her mother. From there, she would have a 15 to 20 minute walk out to R760, the Kilcrony Road, to the grounds of Charleville House. It's a largely rural road with few houses and a footpath on one side only. It was still bright out, with hours to go before sunset, and people were out enjoying a summer Saturday in the scenic surroundings of the area. If anywhere should have felt safe, maybe this was it. Less than 15 minutes later, at around 6:15 p.m, Susan Forsyth was driving with her 12-year-old son when she spotted a black car stopped along the road. It had no lights on, and the door of the boot was open. As she was overtaking the car, Susan heard shouting and saw a dark-haired, Asian-looking young woman sitting on the edge of the boot, looking out at her. The shouting Susan heard then turned to screaming. She heard the sound of someone being slapped. She saw the woman being forced into the boot of the car. The man yelled angrily in a deep voice before he jumped into the car and drove away. Susan knew something was very wrong. She pulled into the side of the road and dialed 999. She told Gardaí what she had seen and told them that it was a black car, maybe a Nissan Qashqai, with a 171D registration. After receiving the call, Gardaí and Bray dispatched 3 patrol cars to the area to search for the suspect vehicle. It was only a few minutes later that Garrett Thompson was driving home when a black SUV-type car pulled out in front of him. He saw what he thought was a child or young girl frantically waving and banging on the rear window of the car he was travelling behind. She had both of her hands up, and to Garrett she looked worried. He wasn't sure what he had seen, but it felt wrong. When he arrived home, he spoke to his wife and told her about what he had seen. She told him to call Gardaí. At 7:22 p.m. he did, telling them a story with details that matched what Susan Forsythe had seen an hour earlier. He described the girl as having Asian features and told Gardaí the car was a black Nissan Qashqai. At the same time that Garrett Thompson was calling with this report, Gardaí had arrived at the location where Susan Forsythe had seen the man forcing the young woman into the boot of his car. Discarded by the roadside, Gardaí found a smashed and broken mobile phone and a shopping bag. Inside was a loaf of bread. By now, Garda patrol cars were searching every road for miles in each direction, and the Air Support Unit helicopter had joined the operation. But the black car remained hidden out there. Somewhere. Justine had told her parents she would be home by about 5:30 p.m. She was rarely late, and she was always in contact. Tess called Danny from work and asked if Justine had come home. She wasn't, he told her. Tess called Justine several times and got no answer. As time went on, their worries grew. 7 o'clock came and went, and she still hadn't come home. Then it was 7:30, and still no sign, no word, nothing. This was not like Justine, this was completely abnormal. It was around this time, at 7:30 p.m., that Tess felt in her gut that something was wrong. She worried something terrible had happened. She sat down in her bedroom and prayed her daughter would come home safe. The Garda search grew on the roads and in the sky. More reports came in of a black Nissan Qashqai being driven erratically in the Rathmichael area, several kilometres from Enniskerry, but Gardaí had yet to track it down. With each passing hour, concern grew over what this picture would be when they finally came to fully understand it. They still knew so little. Who the male driver was, who the young woman was, and crucially, where was the car? As the evening turned to night, Danny and Tess's fears grew. Tess collapsed repeatedly, overcome with worry. Those worries and fears grew even deeper as they looked into the sky above Enniskerry and saw the Garda helicopter hovering there. At 11:40 p.m. that night, they couldn't wait any longer. They called the Gardaí to report their daughter is missing. Members of the force arrived at their home and asked the critical questions. What time did she leave? Where was she going? What was she wearing? The Gardaí took it all down. A 24-year-old Filipino girl wearing a dark-coloured jacket, white t-shirt, grey leggings and runners, 5 feet in height, slight build, brown eyes and long dark hair. It all matched those descriptions from earlier that evening. Gardaí now felt they knew at least one piece of the puzzle. Justine Valdez was the missing woman. Throughout the Saturday night, the 19th, Gardaí trawled through whatever CCTV footage that was available in the immediate vicinity of the abduction site. They looked at traffic camera recordings, and in the middle of the night they called contacts at Dublin Bus to ask for help, and footage from buses that had driven through the area the previous evening was quickly delivered. As Gardaí went through these hours of footage, they found Justine. They found footage of her at the gym and the local shop in Bray, and then they saw her on the bus, in the gym gear her mother told them she was wearing. She was standing up, getting ready to step off the 185 bus. And there, through the rear window, they could see it, looming behind the bus. The black Nissan Qashqai. And then, as Justine departs, the car pulls out and around the bus. The footage wasn't perfect, but Gardaí could make out part of the registration plate. 171D2. The rest of the plate was obscured, but they knew they were drawing closer. By the early hours of the next morning, Sunday the 20th of May, additional CCTV footage from the Enniskerry area confirmed the vehicle to be a black Nissan Qashqai with the registration number 171D20419. It was registered to Mrs. Nicola Hennessy of Woodbrook Lawn, Bray, County Wicklow. At around 3 a.m, Gardaí went to the address. On arrival, they saw that the driveway was empty, but Nicola Hennessy answered at the door. When Gardaí asked about the whereabouts of her car, she told them that her husband had gone out in it the previous afternoon, but had not returned. Gardaí now had their main suspect. Rather, they knew who he was, but still had no idea where he was. More crucially, they didn't know where he had taken Justine Valdez or what he had done with her. They had to find the 40-year-old father of two. They had to find Mark Hennessy. At 3 a.m., Gardaí entered a housing estate in Bray and approached the front door of a home. As they did so, they noticed the driveway was empty. With the black Nissan Qashqai registered to the occupant of the house, nowhere to be seen. Nicola Hennessy answered the door. She told Gardaí that her husband, Mark, had gone out in the car on Saturday afternoon. He had said he was going to meet someone for a pint, but he hadn't replied to her last text message. She told Gardaí she didn't know where he was. As they pieced it together, detectives felt they might at last have their suspect. Mark Hennessy, 40 years old, a father to two young daughters. Mark Hennessy was born in 1978 and was originally from Cromlech Fields, a council estate in Ballybrack in South County Dublin. He worked as a banksman or signaller on building sites, mostly in the Talla area. He had lived with his Welsh wife Nicola for the past 3 years in a semi-detached house in a quiet cul-de-sac in the Woodbrook Lawn Estate in Bray. The daughters were aged 3 years old and just 8 months. The Hennessys were seen as a respectable family. Mark could often be found playing in the front garden with the kids, or offering a helping hand to a neighbour. But he had a record of getting himself in trouble with the law. He had a number of previous convictions going back to his early 20s. In 1999, he was convicted of drugs possession, having been found with €100 worth of cannabis in St. Stephen's Green in Dublin. Not overly remarkable on its own, but he would soon begin showing signs of a more aggressive tendency. In September 2000, he was charged with a public order offence in Rathmines in Dublin, after having reportedly headbutted another individual in a pub. He was convicted of threatening and abusive behaviour, as well as being drunk and disorderly, receiving a fine of €250. For a number of years after that, he had not come to the attention of Gardaí, but in recent weeks he had been in trouble again. Hennessy had appeared in court on the Monday of that week on charges relating to drink driving and leaving the scene of an accident. He was due to appear in court again in Bray that September for the hearing in relation to those offences. Was this a sign that his behaviour was becoming more erratic in the months leading up to May 2018? His alcohol consumption had spiked in recent months, and there were reports that he'd been ejected from at least one pub in the Bray area over the May bank holiday weekend. He also had access to drug dealers who supplied him with cocaine on a regular basis. It would later be reported that he had run up significant debts to drug dealers in the weeks prior. As Gardaí spoke to his wife and other immediate family members, it became apparent that he wasn't the happily married family man that he liked to project. His debts and his increasing frequent abuse of alcohol and cocaine could all be potential triggers or stressors, and this could lead to erratic or impulsive, possibly violent behaviour. As the search for Hennessy got underway, Gardaí issued public appeals, releasing the details they had on the car and its registration plate. This kind of information is rarely released at such an early stage of an investigation, but detectives knew they were in a race against time, so they put it all to the public and asked for their help. But they warned that Hennessy should not be approached. If he was indeed the man who abducted Justine, then he was likely volatile, erratic, and highly dangerous. Gardaí covertly watched Hennessy's home, with members of the Garda Armed Support Unit nearby in case he returned. What Gardaí did not know at this stage was that Hennessy had visited a local pub on the previous day. A little after 5 o'clock on the Saturday, he walked into the lounge of the Rambler's Rest pub in Ballybrack. He was wearing a t-shirt and jeans. The FA Cup final between Chelsea and Manchester United was being shown on the big screen. A group of men sat around watching. Hennessy was heard to remark the match was boring, although he stayed to watch about half an hour of the first half. He didn't buy a drink. He didn't seem agitated, crazed, or intoxicated. Although to some in the pub he did seem a little restless. He walked out shortly after he arrived, with his phone to his ear, strolled across the car park and got into his car. At 5:43 p.m., he reversed out of his parking spot and drove off. Less than half an hour later, Justine would be taken. Later on that Saturday night, he returned to the same pub around 11 p.m. He chatted to some people he knew before leaving again. It seems he then went on a drinking binge and approached several people in different pubs looking to buy drugs. He eventually managed to buy 200 euros worth of cocaine. A few hours later, Gardaí would knock at the door of his home to ask his wife if she knew where he was. At 8 a.m. on the Sunday morning, less than 12 hours after Justine had disappeared, Hennessy answered his phone to his wife. He told her he had slept in the car along the seafront. She asked when he would be home, and he told her it would be soon. She later texted him to tell him Gardaí were looking for him, but didn't receive a reply. While Gardaí felt they were starting to see the whole shape of the puzzle now, the race against time to find Justine and her abductor was still plagued with questions. Who exactly was Mark Hennessy? Why had he targeted Justine? Did they know each other? Or had it been a completely random act? Seeking to locate Hennessy, and hopefully Justine, Gardaí attempted to track his phone. The attempts to trace the whereabouts of Hennessy's phone, however, were hampered because that weekend there was a large Red Bull-sponsored event taking place in Dunleary. With over 75,000 extra people in the area, nearby phone masts were being overworked. This meant that the overload from all the extra mobile phone users was causing signals to be passed on to other, more distant masts, such as Howth. Triangulation of a particular signal, such as Hennessy's, was proving difficult, robbing Gardaí of a critical tool in their hunt. That Sunday in May was a wet day, and as each hour passed, the Gardaí leading the investigation knew their hopes of a happy ending were fading. Throughout that day, scores of Gardaí drove across Wicklow and South Dublin, desperately searching for any sign of Justine or Mark Hennessy. They visited any spot he might usually frequent. They called to his workplace. They waited for him at a gathering his family was having. Later they would come to believe they had been close to Hennessy on several occasions, but he had evaded them each time. However, Gardaí were not alone in the search. The intense media coverage generated by the Gardaí's appeals to be on the lookout for the black Nissan Qashqai and Hennessy himself, coupled with the highly unusual and shocking nature of the crime, meant that the public were on high alert and motivated to help in any way they could. A young woman being snatched from the roadside in broad daylight simply wasn't something to be expected. Not in Ireland. It was more akin to a TV crime drama, or perhaps an occurrence in some gangland neighbourhood in another country. And the appeals worked. On the Sunday evening, the 20th of May, a Dublin woman, Christine Conley, was driving home from work in the Shankill area when she realised that she was driving behind a vehicle that matched the description issued by the Gardaí and the media. She immediately called the Gardaí to let them know she had found the car. She followed it, giving Gardaí real-time updates of its location. Eventually, the Qashqai pulled into the Cherrywood Industrial Estate, which lies about 10 kilometres to the north of Enniskerry. Christine pulled back. She was sure the driver had seen her following him, looking back at her in his rearview mirror. A few minutes later, the phone of Mark Hennessy's wife, Nicola, rang. It was a number she didn't recognise. She answered and heard the voice of her husband. "I've done something awful," he told her. And he told her he would not be coming home. At around 8 p.m, two unmarked Garda cars pulled into the industrial estate and saw the black Qashqai, stopped in a secluded parking area in the southwest part of the site. Mark Hennessy was in the driver's seat. When he attempted to drive off, the Gardaí boxed him in, positioning their cars to the front and rear of the vehicle. Hennessy was clearly on edge. One guard would later say he looked like a man possessed. A civil defence vehicle, responding to the call regarding the suspect's whereabouts, blocked off the entrance to the car park. When Gardaí exited their cars and approached, Hennessy placed his hands on the steering wheel and shrugged. He refused to comply with the guard's request to open the driver's door, which was locked. One of the guard detectives attempted to break the window with a kick, but to no avail. Then, staring straight at the guard, Hennessy took a Stanley knife and cut himself from his left wrist to his elbow in one slicing motion. Still, the guardie couldn't get the door open. Mark Hennessy then began to bend down into the passenger footwell, still holding the knife. Guardie watching couldn't tell what he was doing. In the belief that Justine Valdez was bundled into the footwell and that Hennessy was about to kill her, one of the guards raised his Smith & Wesson Model 10 38 Special revolver to shoulder height and fired a single shot through the driver's window. The loud crack echoed across the parking lot. The bullet hit Mark Hennessy in the shoulder, and it was deflected off his collarbone and traveled through his torso, severing an artery, causing massive blood loss. Mark Hennessy slumped over onto the passenger seat. One of the guard members then smashed the driver's window with his baton and was able to unlock the door using the key fob in the ignition. It was then that he found that Justine Valdez was not in the vehicle. The guard that had fired the single shot then removed the remaining bullets from his service revolver before placing them and the gun on the ground. There would follow an investigation into the shooting by the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission, GSOC, which would ultimately find that he was justified in his decision to fire his weapon, as he had reasonable ground for believing that Justine was still in the car and that her life was in immediate danger. Gardaí opened the boot of the car only to face the terrible realization that Justine was not there. The call went out, an armed incident at Cherrywood Industrial Estate. Paramedics arrived quickly on the scene. They removed Mark Hennessy from the car and began working on him as he lay on the ground beside it. His eyes were open, and the emergency service personnel frantically and repeatedly asked him where Justine was. He said nothing. Mark Hennessy died from his wounds moments later. As well as the gunshot wound and the self-inflicted cut to his arm, there were further cuts to his neck. There were also cuts and scrapes consistent with having pushed through thick bushes and undergrowth. Whatever secrets Hennessy had, whatever reasons had led him to abduct the young woman, died with him. Now there only remained the faintest glimmer of hope of finding Justine alive. The evening light was ebbing away when the Garda Technical Bureau arrived at the scene in Cherrywood. A precursory examination of the bloodstained interior of the Qashqai yielded little in way of evidence pointing to Justine's whereabouts. There was an empty Jack Daniels bottle, but no sign of any of her belongings. But then one of the team noticed something on the passenger seat. There, almost completely hidden under a thick layer of Mark Hennessy's blood, was what appeared to be a handwritten note. It was almost completely unreadable because of the staining, but before the blood congealed, the bureau team was able to make out a handful of words. Puck's Golf Course, Southside. Only one other word was legible. Sorry. This information was quickly relayed to the senior investigating officer, Detective Inspector Frank Keenahan, and the rest of the investigators, but it came with a deepening sense of dread. Puck's Golf Course was a disused and overgrown pitch-and-putt type course, located along Puck's Castle Lane in Rathmichael, a few kilometres north of Enniskerry. This was the vicinity of one of the eyewitness reports the previous day, of a black car being driven erratically in the area. The witness had said it was around 6:50 p.m. He had seen the black Qashqai pulled in near the junction of Puck's Castle Lane and Quarry Road. The driver turned into Quarry Road, but then quickly reversed and sped off northwards, up Puck's Castle Lane. The lane takes its name from the nearby ruins of Puck's Castle, a three-story fortified tower thought to have been built sometime during the 16th century. Puck is derived from the Irish puka, meaning spirit or ghost. The disused Par 3 Puck's Golf Course has spectacular views out over Dublin Bay and along the coastline to Bray. It rises quite steeply to the west, where it is overlooked by the imposing ruin of an old flue chimney, near the summit of Carrick Golligan Hill. The chimney was once part of the long-gone Ballycorus Leadworks, which had operated in the area for nearly 100 years, from 1807 to 1913. The precipitated lead deposits generated by smelting would have been scraped out of the flue by hand, with many workers subsequently dying of lead poisoning, giving the surrounding area the nickname Death Valley. It would later transpire that the location was one of Mark Hennessy's favourite spots. That night, still clinging to the faintest hope, Gardaí had searched the area using the Air Support Unit helicopter, but its heat-sensitive cameras had been hampered as they kept picking up wild animals roaming across the land. It was into this valley that the search teams descended en masse the following morning, Monday 21st of May 2018. A large search zone in Rathmichael had been sealed off. Gardaí, aided by members of the Defence Forces and Civil Defence, prepared to search. They would be supported by the Garda Air Support Unit and cadaver dogs. Before the teams could set off, one guard found Justine's discarded purse in the undergrowth. It contained her identity card. Then, shortly after 3 p.m, another member of the team was combing through thick gorse bushes on a steep embankment bordering the pitch and putt course, about 50 metres off to the left of Puck's Castle Lane. As he looked down the slope, about 40 or 50 feet down, he saw a large wooden spool, the type used for wrapping heavy electric cable around. Something about it didn't feel right to him. He carefully made his way down the steep incline, pushing through the bushes. As he reached the wooden spool, he found Justine Valdez's dead body, partially hidden in the undergrowth. A preliminary examination of Justine's remains by state pathologist Dr. Linda Mulligan indicated that she had died as a result of manual asphyxiation. She had been strangled. The time of death was estimated at some time within the last 48 hours. This led Gardaí to believe that the 24-year-old had been murdered within an hour of being abducted. While the search itself had been relatively short, it had left its mark on those Gardaí who had given all they could to it for the past 36 hours. They had found the worst possible end to it all, and now knew that as they searched frantically across those hours, Justine was already dead. There was nothing they could have done differently to have saved her. The search for Justine had come to the worst possible conclusion for her now grief-stricken parents, Danny and Tess. That afternoon, the Garda Press Office issued a statement. Gardaí investigating the disappearance of 24-year-old Justine Valdez have discovered the body of a female in the Puck's Castle area. The body has not yet been formally identified. Gardaí wish to appeal for privacy for the Valdez family at this time. The following day, Tuesday, May 22nd, shortly after 6 p.m, Danny Valdez entered the Dublin City Morgue. He was accompanied by a Garda from Bray Garda Station. He was brought in to bear witness to what must be one of life's most callous cruelties. He had to identify the body of his daughter. His precious child, to whom he had given all he could since the day she was born in the Philippines. His baby, who he had cherished from thousands of miles away for so many years, before experiencing the incredible joy of having their small family reunited again in Ireland. Their new home, where they had come for a better life and for a chance to realise their dreams. Their new home, where Justine was going to get her education and a good job, where she was going to build her new life. And now here she lay, just 24 years old. And that life and that future taken from her in a seemingly random encounter with evil. With the discovery of her body, cruelly discarded near a disused golf course in Rathmichael, the massive Garda search operation to find Justine Valdez was now over. But there were still many questions left unanswered. Investigating Gardaí now had to try to find an answer to the most crucial one, and the final piece of this terrible puzzle. Why? Why had Mark Hennessy targeted Justine Valdez? Had he planned it all in advance? Perhaps, if that had been the case, what had transpired would in some ways be easier for investigators and the public in general to come to terms with. But the alternative was even more unsettling. What if he hadn't planned it at all? What if it was some sudden deadly impulse? What if Justine had simply been in the wrong place at the wrong time? The investigating Gardaí, led by Detective Inspector Frank Keenahan, now tried to piece together the sequence of events. They already knew Justine's movements during that Saturday, the 19th of May. Her appointment at the Garda station in Bray at 2 p.m. CCTV footage put her at the gym in Cherrywood, then the shop where she bought the bread for Tess. She had taken the bus back to Enniskerry, with the last images of her showing her getting ready to step off, with Mark Hennessy's car looming behind. Detective Inspector Keenahan would later say that he believed Hennessy knew Justine was on that bus, thereby showing a level of premeditation. But did he know this because he had seen her alighting from it before, or had he only seen her for the first time that day? Perhaps when she had left the gym, or maybe whilst she was out and about in Bray. We can't know for certain. What we do know is that there was no connection ever established between Justine and her killer. They didn't know each other. This made his predatory behaviour even more chilling. If Keenahan's suspicions are correct, then Hennessy had tracked his prey, following the bus, and then attacked in broad daylight. Justine had likely been murdered within the next hour. It was around 6:50 p.m. that the eyewitness saw him driving erratically on Puck's Castle Lane. The witness hadn't seen anyone else in the car. Was Justine already dead and Hennessy was frantically searching for somewhere to dispose of her body? Or was she still alive, subdued somehow in the back of the car? Dr. Linda Mulligan's autopsy findings confirmed the cause of death as manual strangulation. No weapon, no ligature. Mark Hennessy had used his bare hands. Bruising and abrasions were found on Justine's thighs and genital area, giving weight to the proposition that this had been a sexually motivated crime of opportunity. But it could not be definitively determined that she had been sexually assaulted. Dr. Mulligan also carried out a toxicology screening that showed Justine Valdez had ingested a small amount of cocaine in the hours before her murder. Had her killer forced her to take it? Again, the answers died with him in that car park in Cherrywood Industrial Estate. Although based off what we know about Justine, it seems highly unlikely she would have taken it voluntarily. As they deepened their investigation into Hennessy's life, Gardaí learned his marriage had been in trouble. He and his wife were on the brink of divorce. He was buried in debt and a frequent cocaine user. He had a second, secret mobile phone, which he used to contact drug dealers. He had also been using dating apps to contact women. It was from this phone that he rang his wife, shortly before he was shot by Gardaí in Cherrywood, to tell her that he had done something awful and would not be coming home. After he had killed Justine and dumped her body off Puck's Castle Lane, he then rang one of his dealers, trying to score some cocaine. He was seen entering the Rambler's Rest a second time that day, around 11 p.m, perhaps trying to establish an alibi for himself. His behaviour in the hours after murdering Justine displayed a total lack of empathy. This trait, along with dishonesty, a proclivity for violence and a lack of culpability, are all signs of a psychopathic personality. The following afternoon, Sunday 20th of May, his family managed to contact him and try to arrange an intervention of sorts. Mark's parents and another close family member met him in the car park of the Killiney Court Hotel, but he drove off before they could speak to him. They didn't see anyone else in the car with him. Hours later, he would be fatally shot in Cherrywood. In an effort to establish exactly why he abducted and murdered Justine, Gardaí next turned their attention to the blood-soaked note which had been recovered from the car after Mark Hennessy had been shot. Now that the blood had congealed, it was completely unreadable. It could be washed to remove the staining, but that might risk destroying the ink as well, so it was first sent to the Garda Documents and Handwriting Examination Section. I received the note from a detective Garda from Bray on the 28th of May 2018, 9 days after Justine Valdez's murder. Using a piece of equipment called the Video Spectral Comparator, or VSC, I examined it under different wavelengths of light, mainly in the infrared spectrum, and was able to filter out or see beneath the heavy blood staining. I made my notes and took images of the now visible writing. I then passed the note on to a colleague in the fingerprint section, and he was able to wash away the blood using a distilled water solution, which thankfully didn't destroy the ink. Now we could see what Mark Hennessy had written before that fatal shot had been fired. If we were hoping for answers as to why he had committed the terrible crime, we found none. He apologized to Justine's parents and wrote he hoped they would find peace, but he offered no explanation, nothing that could bring even a sliver of peace. Again, he indicated where her body was, Puck's Golf Course, Southside. He apologized to his wife and asked for her forgiveness. Mark Hennessy knew his end was close. Reading the note, I got the impression that he himself was just as bewildered and shocked at what he had done as everybody else was. It was a bitter pill to swallow for the investigating Gardaí, the Hennessy family, and, most of all, for Justine's parents. Beau Taplin, an Australian author, once said, "The fucked up truth of it all is not everything happens for a reason." The highly unusual and shocking nature of Mark Hennessy's abduction and murder of Justine Valdez led Gardaí to speculate that perhaps this hadn't been the first time that he had committed such a crime. Therefore, his DNA was checked against other unsolved murders and sexual assaults. However, no evidence could be found to link him with any other cases. The day after Justine's body had been discovered, a GoFundMe page was set up by a Filipino community group called Outreach Ireland, which provides support to Filipinos living in this country. The intention was to raise funds to help pay for Justine's funeral and burial expenses, as well as expenses incurred in the repatriation of her remains. The fund eventually raised over €150,000 from public donations. Justine Valdez lay in repose in a funeral parlour in Bray for several days. She was laid out in a white blazer in her open coffin, while a silk pink scarf covered her neck. Hundreds of people came to pay their respects, including many people who didn't know the family, but were touched by the tragedy. On the 31st of May 2018, Justine's remains arrived back in her hometown after a marathon trip from Dublin via Clark International Airport in Angeles City in the Philippines. She lay in repose in her grandmother's house for several weeks, according to tradition, as in the Philippines it is believed that the soul doesn't leave the body until the 40th day after death. On the 2nd of July, having waited until after what would have been her 25th birthday on the 20th of June, Justine's funeral mass took place in St. Joseph's Parish Church in Banangan, Nueva Vizcaya. Family and friends wore t-shirts and badges with her face printed on them. Afterwards, her silver coffin, carried in a decorated silver carriage, was brought to Ariteo Cemetery for burial. A photo of the murdered student and the names of her family members were printed on a banner and paraded through the narrow streets. After the service, dozens of white balloons were released into the air. Danny and Tess would later give an interview to RTÉ Radio, thanking the people of Ireland for their kindness and generosity. They said they were not happy that Mark Hennessy had died, as it had robbed them of a chance to understand why this terrible tragedy had befallen them. They also graciously extended their sympathy to the Hennessy family. With the perpetrator of the crime dead, it was Mark Hennessy's relatives that received a sentence. They would always remain intrinsically linked to his horrific crimes. His wife left Ireland with their two young daughters just a few months later, seemingly unable to remain living in the shadow and shame of what he had done. The Valdezes would later share a letter that Justine had written to them, but never sent. It had been found in her belongings after her death. Excerpts of it read, "To my mom and dad, I don't know how to express the words 'I love you' right from the bottom of my heart, because words aren't enough to let you know how much I love and care for you. Because of you, I have overcome all the trials in my life. I will give my very best just to finish my studies and have a stable job in the future. I also want to thank him up there for giving me the best parents I've ever wanted. I will overcome the challenges that come my way. Absolutely the best. Thank you for everything. Your loving daughter, Justine. It has been said that grief is simply love with no place to go. That's why it hurts so much. The love that Justine Valdez instilled in the lives of all who knew her added to the pain of her passing. Grief is that unwanted gift that keeps on giving. From the initial shock of loss to the realization that a loved one is gone forever. Danilo and Teresita Valdez remember Justine in many different ways each day. They have never washed the blouse she wore the night before she was killed. Teresita says she clings to it tightly to smell her daughter. They have never been able to change anything of her bedroom. Each night they say goodnight to her bed, still made up as it was when she last left. Each May, on the anniversary of Justine's death, they cook a meal of her favorite food. At the inquest into Justine's murder, her parents delivered a statement. In it they said, "Our tears will never stop when we think of our beautiful Justine. We miss her so much it is hard to bear. We will never know why this has happened. We will never understand how such evil can exist in the world. Our grief will never pass. The loss of our beautiful Justine will never fade. We will never have peace. Justine was our life, and when she was taken away, our world ended. We try to smile, but in our hearts we are still crying." Danilo and Teresita Valdez's world was broken apart by their daughter's murder. In time, they would begin to put that world back together, piece by piece. Eventually, their world would be somewhat whole again and strong, but it would be a different shape, a different size. One vital piece would always be missing. The horrific events that unfolded over that May weekend in 2018, the abduction and callous murder of 24-year-old Filipino student Justine Valdez, sent shockwaves not only across Ireland but across the globe. If anything can be learned from this tragedy, it's this. The sense of safety and security that we take for granted in our everyday lives only exists retrospectively. It has to be shattered before we realize it was ever there in the first place. Thank you for listening to this episode of Lines of Inquiry. We now have an email address, linesofinquiry@goloudnow.com, and we would love to hear from you, so get in touch. Whether you have a story you think we should cover, or just want to let us know how you felt about an episode. Again, that email is linesofinquiry@goloudnow.com. If you're listening on Spotify, please leave a comment on this episode and let us know what you think of the podcast. We really appreciate those who have taken the time to give the podcast a review. With well over 1,000 five-star ratings on Spotify already, I am genuinely humbled by the support. Thank you. That generous support helps us to tell these stories. If you haven't yet rated the podcast, I would be grateful if you could give us a five-star rating wherever you're listening, sharing it on your story on Instagram, or simply telling a friend that you're listening to the podcast. Make sure to like or follow the podcast in your podcast app and hit the notifications button so you'll know every time a new episode is released. Lines of Inquiry is presented by me, John Sweetman. The podcast is created by Darren Cleary. Our executive producer is Owen Brennan. Our producers are Siobhan McGuire and Siobhan Walsh. Sound editing and design by Neil Kavanagh, with additional editing support from Ed Smith. Social media, marketing, video and legal support comes from the Go Loud team. This episode was written by me, with script editing from Owen Brennan and additional research by Siobhan McGuire. In the end, everything done in the dark comes to light.